From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Longtime Representative Maxine Waters of Southern California continues to be a focus of threats after she urged progressives to confront Trump administration officials in restaurants and other public places about their anti-immigrant policies. President Trump has attacked Waters on his Twitter feed multiple times, and it didn't help that top Democratic leaders Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi condemned Waters. A deputy district attorney in San Bernardino County named Michael Selyem has been placed on leave and is under investigation for tweeting deeply offensive sexist remarks about Waters and wondering aloud why she hasn't yet been shot. My guest today has been on the receiving end of similar threats after challenging white supremacy on social media. Saira Rao, who ran for Congress in Denver as a staunch progressive Democrat and was a featured guest on our show ahead of Colorado's primary, is temporarily leaving the state with her family. She joins me now to explain why. Saira Rao was the co-founder of In This Together Media, former clerk for the U.S. Court of Appeals, and a first-generation Indian American. She is just a few hours from heading to the airport with her family. Welcome to the program, Saira.
Thanks, Sonali.
Well, we covered your campaign in the primary. You lost to the incumbent, Diana DeGette. Your campaign got a lot of attention from progressives, particularly from communities of color, who were happy to see a woman of color take on not just the Trumpism that we see, but especially the sort of establishment Democrats and their complacency. Explain to us what started all of this. You simply retweeted an article by Professor George Yancey on Twitter, and you agreed or you answered a question that he posed in this New York Times editorial.
Sure. I want to start by saying that I don't think that Schumer and Pelosi didn't just make it, you know, didn't make it better. I think they essentially shot Maxine Waters in the back. And people wonder why people of color are fleeing the party. Young, you know, white people are fleeing the party. The party doesn't have any of our backs. They have their own rich white base, and that's basically it. And so what's happened to me in the past 48 hours is like dictionary definition, liberal white supremacy. So I'm a private citizen, right? I'm a private citizen. On Thursday, I did what a lot of private citizens do. I tweeted a New York Times article, and I am now receiving death threats as a result of it. So that article that you mentioned by Professor Yancey, he asks rhetorically, should I give up on white people? And the point is, you know, as a black man, he has been toiling to dismantle white supremacy. And he's come to this place where, you know, we can't do it. The people who created these systems of oppression and benefit from them have to dismantle it. And so that means white people are responsible for dismantling white supremacy. Men are responsible for dismantling misogyny. And so I just quoted Professor Yancey's article, and I just said short and long, his question, should I give up on white people? I said short and long answer, yes. Okay, from there, here's the connecting of the dots. White male Democrat Paul Rosenthal, he was in the state legislature and he got knocked off the ballot this year. He is a white man who then quotes my tweet and starts explaining racism to me and how I'm being a reverse racist. And then he tags Colorado Politics, which is a mainstream, you know, political trade mag here. The next thing you know, a quote reporter, I don't think he deserves that title, Joey Bunch, finds my cell phone number and calls me. I'm with my family on vacation, and just starts berating me and tells me, like, he says, you know, you put this out, this is out there now, as if he's like discovered an ancient Egyptian language rather than the fact, like, reading a tweet that I was like, yes, I'm very well aware I actually tweeted that. He then proceeds to call me a racist, hangs up the phone, and I'm like, okay, whatever. He then writes an article. So that, again, private citizen tweeting a New York Times article. He then writes an article that says former congressional candidate gives up on white people. So that's a hit piece right there. And, you know, everyone went wild. And Michael Harriet at The Root, who's one of my idols, picked it up and wrote a very funny piece. Funny, not ha-ha. Like, he always brings a tremendous amount of levity to this really hard topic, and something to the effect of Denver snowflakes melt when, you know, ex-congressional candidate says she's giving up on white people. So then, this is on Saturday. On Sunday, Breitbart, who essentially trolls Michael Harriet, picked up his story on me, and then that's when the floodgates opened. And, you know, die, and you should be target practice, and you and your kids should go back, you stinky, like horrible, horrible, horrible language, go to the Ganges and drown, and that kind of stuff. So that's where we are now.
So you've been getting threats from presumably mostly white folks in not just probably Denver and Colorado, but around the country now that Breitbart picked this up?
Mm-hmm.
When you, it feels as though Paul Rosenthal did to you what Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi have done to Maxine Waters, that Maxine Waters doesn't just have to deal with Trump and the right wing, but members of her own party. Would you say that's essentially true for you?
White supremacy runs deep in both parties. So not just Paul Rosenthal, okay? My former opponent, my representative, Diana DeGette, hasn't publicly condemned the hate, not once. She's been called and called and called by people, please come out and publicly condemn the hate. Crickets. Senator Michael Bennett, crickets. Senator Cory Gardner, crickets. Governor John Hickenlooper, crickets. These are Democrats, but for Cory Gardner, they're not condemning anything, right? And meanwhile, they're talking about how horrible Donald Trump is. How are they any different than the Republican Party? I don't see the difference. And so, yes, 100%. And you know why? I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why Nancy Pelosi and Schumer said that. I will tell you why Diana DeGette and Michael Bennett and Governor Hickenlooper haven't said anything. They think we deserve it.
Yeah.
They think that we have brought this onto ourselves. They want to see us dead. There's no other reason for Pelosi and Schumer doing that. She has people coming for her all the time. And her own party not only doesn't have her back, they are pushing her into the gunfire. They are not complicit. This is overt. This is overt, and it is sickening.
Now, a number of Black women and men wrote a letter to Pelosi and to Schumer, basically urging them to support Maxine Waters. It's pretty remarkable that Schumer and Pelosi have to be asked. Actually, it was nearly 200 Black female leaders and their allies, both within and without and outside of Congress, signed this letter calling on Democrats, the top Democrats, to defend Waters. They so far have not, to quote you, crickets. It's been basically nothing from them. But yet, Black women were the single demographic that voted in higher numbers than ever for Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. And they've been the single most reliable demographic for the Democratic Party. It seems as though the Democratic Party seems to very clearly take them for granted.
That's a very nice term, and we've been saying that. I would say they take us not just for granted, they use us, and they kick us to the curb when they no longer have use for us. And guess what? We are no longer showing up for you. Nancy Pelosi, we are not showing up for you. Chuck Schumer, we are not showing up for you. Diana DeGette, we are not showing up for you. Michael Bennett, we are not showing up for you. It is no longer happening. When both parties are essentially the same, this is not happening anymore. They are not looking out for us. They're not only not looking out for us, they are literally throwing us into danger. And we are done. And I speak for me and a whole lot of other people of color, and not just people of color. We had a party last night. It was a campaign thank you party. It was mostly not even Black and brown people, a lot of white people. They're done too. They are done. They are done being taken for granted and treated like crap.
Saida, I want to ask you a question, the answer of which is quite obvious to people of color, but I feel like we should just spell it out just in case. And this question is that, what do you make of the equivalence that's being drawn between the statements you and Maxine Waters made and the violent rhetoric that Trump espouses and that others have espoused? Essentially, Pelosi and Schumer said to Maxine Waters that, and they have essentially agreed with those people on the right who say that it was Maxine Waters who has incited violence when she urged her supporters to confront Trump administration officials publicly about their anti-immigrant policies. And of course, you've been accused of fomenting racism by saying that you've given up on white people. Is this a false equivalence? Just tease that apart for us.
Calling calling out racism and white supremacy isn't racist. And those people who say doing that are racist. Calling Maxine Waters un-American and calling her statements unacceptable, that's racist. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer have revealed themselves to be white supremacists. It's as simple as that. So this is like textbook. This happened in the 60s. This happened with MLK. It's all the same stuff. So go back and read. You know, your tone isn't right. You're being divisive. You're inciting violence. So this is classic silencing, right? Turning it on the person calling out the oppression. So just like when women, white women say someone's being sexist, then they get called man hater, right? It's like, it's a very classic way to shut it down. And I don't blame people for being shut down and silenced. I do think that there's a big movement in this country of a lot of us who are done being silent, though. And anytime you call out racism, anytime you're a brown or black person calling out racism and essentially calling for civil disobedience, which Maxine Waters did, and you get shut down and you get called un-American and you get called a racist, that person saying that to you is a white supremacist. So I do not see the difference between Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump. I just don't. They're extremes. Obviously, they're different. It's white supremacy sort of exhibiting itself in different ways. But let's be clear, it is still white supremacy.
And you don't see nearly any kind of the same outrage toward actual racism facing people of color, which is so much more rampant and so clearly the issue here, than you do, when people take offense at whiteness and white supremacy and white domination being called out. You see those people who accuse you of, well, you're just being racist too, are those people who are accusing you of so-called reverse racism, which isn't a thing. Are they ever as outraged by the treatment of black and brown people in our society? Right?
I think we know the answer to that, Sonali. It's no. And I'll just give you an anecdote because this happened about a half an hour ago. I was on the phone with a super liberal white woman from a super liberal publishing house in super liberal New York City who told me, quote, death threats happen to everyone. I don't know why you're scared. I suspect that that comes from someone who's never received a death threat. Number two, I think that you calling white people to end white supremacy is a stupid strategy. And I said, it's not a strategy. It's my story. I'm speaking my truth. And then she literally white-splained white supremacy to me. So she's a white supremacist. I mean, it's like, it's institution upon institution. It's the media, it's publishing houses, it's hospitals, it's schools, it's boardrooms, it's everywhere. And they all work together to support it. And I'm really tired of like putting my dukes up trying to beat something that's unbeatable.
So what sort of support have you received in Denver? Because, you know, you were a first-time candidate facing a long-time Democratic incumbent, and you still won 30% of the vote. You clearly did stir something within the Denver grassroots and have those people who voted for you, who stumped for you, who campaigned for you, come out in support of you?
Oh, my God. So, yeah, let me be clear, like, we're bigger and better than they are, and we are gaining momentum. So 20 weeks, no name ID, person of color running in a hyper white district in a hyper white state, relative newcomer to Colorado, been here 5 years, no corporate money. 20 weeks, 43,000 votes. 43,000 votes. More than it was roughly 1 in 3. Had we had more time, we would have won. You know, there's a lot of stuff. So it is a movement. An anti-racist movement largely supported by white people.
And that's because that's Colorado's demographics partly.
Well, yeah, and also like, look, it's the Democratic Party is not supporting most white people, right? I mean, it's like there's a small majority of white people that the Democratic Party is supporting.
And in fact, I want to just bring up that there's a piece in The Atlantic about black women who have been running in races around the country and actually winning races who are wondering why the Democratic Party has completely ignored them. These are women who are actually winning races for the party, actually making headway, and have received nearly a call from leaders of the party or any kind of support from the party.
And I think you know the answer as to why that is.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's deeply disappointing, but it's also very freeing and illuminating. You know, the amount of hours and hours and hours I used to spend canvassing and call. I mean, I canvassed and called for Diana to get 18 months ago. You know, my kid did. The amount of money I've raised for these people. You know, I had a white female U.S. senator last fall when I asked her about what she was doing about racial justice. You know what she said to me, Sonali? Can't even make this stuff up. I just posted about Hidden Figures on Instagram. That was her response. Can't even make it up. I mean,
you might as well have said some of my best friends are black.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah. I guess her anecdote about Hidden Figures was more interesting than that, but so it's good to know where my time and resources and where our time and resources. So I'll tell you what our coalition is, which is interesting because if it can happen here in Denver, it can happen anywhere. Brown and black people, old people, young white millennials, people in the tech industry, working class people, poor people, literally everybody who is not a rich white establishment person is in this coalition. People who never vote, people who haven't voted in 20 years, first time voters. We had a ton of 18-year-old voters. So we're coming. I mean, we're organizing, and that is what this all comes down to, is organizing. And that's what we're doing. We are getting super organized, and I know there are communities all over the country that are getting super organized. So we are coming for the establishment in both parties, Republicans and Democrats. We are coming for you.
I want to focus for a minute on the threats that you received. We'll put one up on our screen for our audience, our TV audience. I'm assuming many, many threats you've received, probably in social media, possibly over email. What has that led to for you in terms of your decision to leave the state temporarily? I understand that this has to do with you fearing literally for your family, for your kid. You have two little kids.
I'm in this fight. I will die for this cause. What purpose do we have in life if we don't work to make things better for future generations? My kids don't deserve this, though. They are 7 and 10 years old. They have become very public figures here. People know who they are. People know what they look like. Everyone knows where we live. It is not okay for me to even risk an ounce of violence against them. And that being said, it's temporary because I'm under no delusion. I've spent the majority of my life in either Colorado, Virginia, or New York City. And the white supremacy is real in all of those places. It just exhibits itself in slightly different ways. So if we could move somewhere where we'd be free of white supremacy, I think we'd all be there right now, right? That's not happening. But in the, like, I think these trolls are going to move on pretty soon, right? Like what my sense is there are a whole lot of really angry white people, women and men, who spend their days just trolling people like me and sending hate messages, and they'll move on to the next one. And what's really upsetting, though, when I talked to Michael Harriet at The Root, he said, it was funny because he's funny. He was like, the amount of death threats that I receive, it's actually white noise now. Like it's so prevalent. But look at what happened. What was it in Maryland at the Gazette? They received death threats and people there got killed.
Right, because there's a giant overlap between the supporters of Trump and those racist trolls, as well as gun owners and gun proliferation activists. We know that, unfortunately. And while it seems as though while the white liberals aren't the ones waving the guns, they're sort of standing by and inadvertently egging on the racist, right? So it's a sort of a double whammy. It's different manifestations of white supremacy. And so what do you feel that what's happened to you might be opening the eyes of some stalwart Democrats who are slowly realizing that their party's leadership is a big part of the problem?
Yes. But I guess for me, I no longer care about those people. because everyone's been caring about those people for so long, we have to care about everybody else. Mm. So if we can stop focusing on trying to educate white supremacists on white supremacy, and instead start organizing everybody else, organizing the people who do not benefit from white supremacy, we win. And I think this super myopic view of winning races has been about, you know, winning over like the party people. What about everyone else? We have we have such terrible voter turnout. Let's just start going after everybody else, you know, and ignore like ghost Pelosi, ghost Schumer, like stop paying attention to them. And like, let's start paying attention to everybody else. And I wouldn't say they're standing on this, they're standing by egging it on. They are shining the boots. They are feeding the people who are in the army, the white supremacist armies. They're not just standing by, they're actually.
Right, a lot of right-wing media gleefully quoted Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi in their hit pieces on Maxine Waters. Yep. You can't get more obvious than that.
It doesn't take a detective.
And someone like Maxine Waters, who has been in the left wing of the party and also been just an incredibly independent lawmaker, seems to offer a wonderful example of how one can stand up to the crazy racists, because she keeps bringing the issue back to what really matters. In the case of the conversation that she had, or the speech she was quoted from, it was about the anti-immigrant policies, and she keeps redirecting the conversation to the actual problem of racist policies targeting immigrants, family separation, etc. But of course, you know, women like Maxine Waters, women like you are strong, but you're not invulnerable. And I think that's another point that we really have to understand, is that after a while, those threats do hurt. They make an impact, and they really need to stop.
It's silencing. I mean, and what's beautiful about Maxine Waters, she doesn't need to keep taking this. No one should blame her if she just retired and moved to Hawaii or wherever, like some island. What I see in her, which is just so amazing, is she gives zero Fs. Like, she truly understands that she doesn't matter, right? So she can either be silent and live silently in oppression, or she can be outspoken and live loudly with oppression. Those are the two choices. You speak out and you die, or you remain silent and you die. And she gets that, which is why she keeps speaking out. What does she have to lose, right? I mean, like, what do I have to lose? Seriously, all I have to do is gain. It's not going to happen in my lifetime, but if I can even make this world slightly more woke for my kids and for your kids, then great. Then I've done something with my life.
Saira, I want to wish you the best of luck. I don't know if you want to answer this question, but I'll put it out there anyway. Planning on a second run for Congress anytime soon?
I can't imagine if we're still at this two-party situation. I don't know which. I mean, I don't understand which brand. It's the Democrats. I no. I mean, if I could figure out a way to do it without having to be a Democrat or a Republican, perhaps. But I have a bunch of other things cooking, which I will share with you down the line.
Well, good luck to you. Thank you for all you do, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Sonali.
Saira Rao ran for Congress in Colorado's 1st District. She's the founder, co-founder of In This Together Media, former clerk for the U.S. Court of Appeals, first-generation Indian American. We've been discussing the threats that she and Maxine Waters have been facing for speaking out about racism and racist policies. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.